I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to continue our discussion and exploration of its central Indiana's waterways. We're going to talk about what they mean to us and what they should mean to us. We will talk about ways we can connect with them and ways we can reconnect with them. My guests are Kelly Brown of Reconnecting to Our Waterways and Molly Trueblood with the Butler University Center for Urban Ecology. Please join the conversation. Call us at 866-476-3881. Email us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about the state of Indiana's waterways. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are Kelly Brown. She is the Collective Impact Coordinator for Reconnecting to Our Waterways, otherwise known as ROW, and Molly Trueblood, who is Community Organizer at Butler University Center for Urban Ecology. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, I'm very excited to be here.
It's good to have both of you here. So we probably ought to start, give me an overview on what the state of Indiana's waterways might be, and then we'll go from there. We'll start with you, Kelly.
Okay. So I'll focus more on central Indiana with where Indianapolis is hubbed, because Reconnecting to Our Waterways is focused in Marion County. And many of Indiana's waterways are very polluted for a variety of reasons. And historically, we've been using them as means to get our effluent out. There's a lot of farm production north of us, and the White River, being the main waterway that goes through Indianapolis, is actually considered an impaired waterway. It is on IDEM, so the Indiana Department of Environmental Management's 303D list, which is part of the Clean Water Act. And the main impairment in downtown Indianapolis is through E. coli. So from all of this pollution and kind of maybe negative look at the waterways, people have often turned their back on the waterways and don't really see it as a major asset. But it's a great way to connect with nature and get outside and see a lot of wildlife and connect with all waterways, I guess.
Well, and we have seen that distancing from the waterways, and we'll talk more about that. We actually did a show, I think it was about a year ago, on the White River and the place that it occupied in the city's history and its cultural life, and how that kind of disappeared. I'm going to ask you, Molly, overall, I mean, aside from the White River, what is the state of the state's waterways? I mean, and what are the problems that are afflicting them? How did they get to the point where many of them, like the White River, aren't necessarily usable?
Sure. Well, in Indianapolis and metropolitan areas, a lot of the issues you'll find are with E. coli, which is a result of our combined sewer system. So the septic and the sewer systems are over 100 years old. And so when we have a rain event like we did today earlier up near Butler, that means that our wastewater doesn't have anywhere to go. So it ends up going into the waterways, which is where the E. coli results from. In general, all the other pollution that we would see on the majority of streams and waterways in Indiana would be from agricultural runoff and things like the oil that spills from your car or the tread that wears off of your tires. And then when it rains, all that gets washed off into the waterways. So I think we have a long way to go, but part of our mission for ROW is to at least get people to notice it, because we've allowed these pollution impacts as well as some overgrowth to happen around the waterways of Indiana. And so it's harder for us to even know that they're there. And it's hard for us to care about them if we don't know that they're there.
And how? When did this process start? I mean, how long have our rivers, basically, and creeks, streams, been impaired? I'll stay with you on that one, Molly.
Sure. From what I know, the sewer septic combination happened over 100 years ago when Indianapolis was much smaller than it is now. And just as we've grown and grown, the system becomes less and less able to carry our waste away. So I'm not sure if we have an exact date, but probably since people have been driving cars, it's gotten a lot worse.
It's gotten worse. And was it a problem of people just not knowing back then, or a conscious?
I think it was a perspective on the waterway as either it will wash itself clean or this is just an open sewer for us. For example, one of the waterways that we look at, Pogue's Run, it goes through the near east side of Indianapolis, so sort of starts around 21st and Shadeland. If you know the water park around Interstate 70 that has the sculptures around it, that's part of the Pogue's Run watershed. And when Indianapolis was first built, Pogue's Run was looked at as a nuisance and as a mosquito breeding ground and kind of an open sewer. And so it also disrupted the perfect grid that we like to have in Indianapolis, there's actually parts of Pogue's Run that have been built over and put into a culvert so that we don't have to deal with it. So I think it's just been an attitude that we have towards the waterways since 100 years plus in Indianapolis.
Kelly, what should we do about this?
Well, there's a variety of things going on right now in Indianapolis. To address the combined sewer overflow, Citizens Energy Group has been doing a deep rock tunnel, which you can learn more about that with Dig Indy on their website. And that is where they are building over 28 miles of tunnel over 250 feet underground in Indianapolis. And that is to stop those combined sewer overflows from going into Indianapolis's waterways. Instead, they will be diverted and put into these tunnels and held there and then pumped back to the wastewater treatment plants so they can be cleaned and then safely released back into the waterway. And so this is actually an over $2 billion project paid through all rates. So it's our citizens actually paying for it, the energy group and those people who use all waterways. So that's going to make a big difference on that point source pollution of the raw sewage going into the waterways.
Is there a way to quantify what kind of difference it's going to make?
So currently, I think about between 60 and 80 times a year, those combined sewer overflows open. After this project, it should only happen between like 1 to 5 times a year. That will be a huge change in the loads and the amount of pollutions that go into all waterways.
And Molly, will that clean up then the rivers, or is that sort of like, okay, you know, we've put a pebble there, but it's a long way from a dam?
It will make a really big difference as to how people can enjoy the waterways and how often we're able to interact with it. I would just point out that all of the non-point, so the oil spills, the other things that like you wash in your car, all of those things will still happen to the waterway. So it won't be 100% clean, but it will be drastically different from what it is. And, you know, if you're concerned about the cleanliness of our waterways and you want to do more yourself, I would add that people can plant native plants or they can pick up their dog waste, which a lot of people think doesn't really make a big difference, but it has a lot of the same bacteria as our waste would have. Mm-hmm. And there's actually an organization locally here that called the White River Alliance that has a bunch of those individual actions that people can take under the Clear Choices Clean Water campaign.
And if you want to give people the URL, that's okay for that.
I think it's whiteriveralliance.org.
Yeah, whiteriveralliance.org. Mm-hmm. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the state of Indiana's waterways. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimitswfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. So we're saying that this $2 billion project will help, but it won't completely solve the problem. I'm going to give both of you a crack at this one. Mm-hmm. what would it take to completely solve the problem? And since I let Kelly have the first word last time, okay. I'll let Molly have it this time.
Myself, I would advocate for a cultural shift in how we approach our ecological services. So that's a way we look at nature as taking care of things for us, like taking our waste away or trees cleaning the air for us. I think that it's very easy for us to go about our day and not recognize all of the benefits that we gain just from trees and plants and things that are around us. So I would say to really make it 100% clean, we would have to both interact with the water more and take a different perspective on what we want it to be in our community.
Can you give me an example, though, of how that would manifest itself? I mean, in what ways would we see that cultural shift?
Well, for example, I was recently in Minneapolis, and there's a million lakes up there. So,
and a reasonably big river, too.
Yeah. but all of the park systems are built around these lakes. And when I was there, there were always people swimming in it. And me growing up, I grew up on Fall Creek north of here, and we were up in the creek a lot. But I think there's, you know, people here, at least in Indianapolis, don't get to have that experience because we shouldn't be in the waterway at this point. But I think more personal interactions with water in that way and a different approach is looking at the water as an asset and celebrating it would make a big difference. So things like the White River Festival, making that a bigger deal, or there's a event called Celebration Fall Creek that we could make a bigger deal, getting more people involved in those.
Okay. Kelly.
I would also say there's some simple changes we could make in our daily life on how we use water as a resource. So a lot of people like a really green lawn. So we water our lawn and fertilize it, and that would also then run down our street. And we have combined sewer overflows. We also have just sewer systems that go straight to the water where it's just the street. And so maybe thinking of having natives instead that don't need to be watered every week, that have very deep roots that actually help the water go back into our groundwater aquifers, which is a very important part of Indiana as a whole and how we use and have water, how it flows underneath us, something that we don't see or think about. Also, how we develop and how we use the city. So having more trees to reduce the heat and capture the rain. So on a larger level, we have an individual responsibility, but we also have a civic responsibility. So green
moves. A collective responsibility.
Yes.
So, and how many of these challenges are specific to Indiana? Your mention of being in Minnesota and the Twin Cities makes me think, obviously, we can't be the only place, but are there problems that are specific to Indiana, Kelly?
It's actually a very widespread problem. I can't remember how many cities. I think it's close to 100 that have the combined sewer overflow problem. And the way we are very car-centric is, you know, nationwide. So that's a very impactful on our waterways and the environment in general. I would say most of our issues are not exclusive to Indianapolis. You can find them particularly in any Midwest or Eastern city where we get a lot of rainwater. We think we're very water-rich because we do have rain. It's very green. We have lakes and rivers. But if we don't treat our waterways properly, we will have problems in the next 30 years on having usable, drinkable water. And also just having all the water go downstream instead of infiltrating into the groundwater, we'll see a very big change.
Let me reframe the question then a little bit. Mm-hmm. Are there other places that are doing a better job of coping with this than we are? Mm-hmm. And first, what are those places? Then maybe after we get back from the break, we'll talk about what they're doing that we could be. Well, Kelly, Molly's looking in your direction, so I'm thinking she wants you to answer this one.
I'm just trying to think of a place that is doing it better, and I will think of it if Kelly doesn't have an answer.
Kelly?
I know there's a lot of different... Yes, you did. That's fine.
Yeah.
Well, on a different note than maybe the combined sewer overflows, but if you look at, say, New York City, they actually have a big wetland that is their water source. So they're using the natural ecology to be that cleaning supply of water and hold that water there. And they started that wetlands has been there historically, mm-hmm. but they've recognized that as a major source and a way of using the water for the city instead of us just seeing the water as something that goes through the city and not an actual relationship between them.
Well, and I want to talk a little more about that whole idea of how we view water, whether it's, you know, it sounds like New York City has embraced it as sort of part of the landscape and an asset rather than an obstacle like Pogue's Run or whatever that had to be mastered. If you're just joining us, we are talking about the state of Indiana's waterways. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimitswfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Kelly Brown. She is the Collective Impact Coordinator for Reconnecting to Our Waterways, otherwise known as ROE, and Molly Trueblood, who's Community Organizer at Butler University Center for Urban Ecology. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking about the state of Indiana's waterways today on No Limits. My guests are Kelly Brown. She is the Collective Impact Coordinator for Reconnecting to Our Waterways, otherwise known as ROE, and Molly Trueblood, who is Community Organizer at Butler University Center for Urban Ecology. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named JD has done and send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. And JD says, as an active volunteer in the KIBI Adopt a Block program, I see daily the amounts of trash, especially cigarette filters and plastic bags, bottles and styrofoam cups that are thrown into the streets. All of this gets washed into the storm sewers and waterways, and in my area winds up going directly into White River. We used to have a greater awareness of litter that seems to have faded from the public consciousness. KIBI and other organizations can only do so much. How do we get citizens of our city more aware of how the waste thrown into the street can affect us all? Okay, I'm going to let you go after that one, Molly, but I'm guessing both of you want to tee off on that.
Sure, yeah. I see that in my neighborhood, too. And one of the things that's most remarkable is how quickly the trash clogs up our storm drain and floods our street. So one thing I would advocate for is just watch how quickly your street clears when you clear that storm drain out. It's really shocking how fast that water can move. But I would say as far as getting people to care about the trash, it really has to be a collective effort. I mean, it's individual choices that happen to make our streets less livable. And it has to be, again, a culture shift and a groundswell of opinions changing and really valuing where you live and understanding the connection to it, which I think we've seen through ROE. We have a long way to go to improve upon that, but we're starting to make some inroads, and I think people are starting to realize how connected they are to their whole ecosystems.
Kelly.
Yes, I would say awareness is one of the big things. A lot of people don't know they might only live a few blocks from a waterway because, as I think Molly mentioned earlier, they've become overgrown. You can't really see them necessarily. And in some places, like Pogue's Run, we actually pave over them. But they're actually a very integral part of Indianapolis. We have over 6 waterways that flow through Indy, and everything we do will eventually end up in a waterway. There could be some creative ways to raise people's awareness about these storm drains and trash. There is often a little marker that says it has a fish on it, and you know this drain goes to a waterway. There's been some other ideas to do some art maybe around it where you paint a large fish and so kind of depict that environment you're impacting through the trash. Mm-hmm. So we could do some very fun ways to engage people, get them to be curious so maybe they would want to learn more, because people are going by their day-to-day life. You might not stop and think about how you drop a cigarette butt, and that actually has a bigger impact. That's going to be damaging the ecosystem where there's fish and frogs and things like that. And just making people aware is, I think, a large step in this.
Molly.
Yeah, one fun way that I have seen an organization raise awareness about the impact of trash is the White River Alliance. Again, they have a fundraiser, mm-hmm. and last year they collected trash actually out of the White River, and they brought it to their fundraiser and had people make art out of it.
Oh, so a lot of this, it sounds like, though, part of the key is going to be to get people thinking of this creatively and making some fun out mm-hmm. of it rather than the scolding eat your vegetables approach mm-hmm. to doing this. We are talking about the state of Indiana's waterways here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do what our regular listener named Marion has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Marion, welcome to the program.
Hi, John. Thank you for having this important discussion. As you know, I'm an earth and animal advocate, and I worked very hard on comments to the IDM about this 303D list. But I think, and I appreciate the effort for urban awareness, but I also think the focus on urban sewage, which is treated, takes the awareness away from our devastated rural communities and what is continued to happen in Indiana, which is the relentless expansion of livestock production and the crops, chemically supported crops that are contributing the nitrates and phosphates to our blue-green algae. 80% of our waterways in Indiana are infected with E. coli, but most of that comes from animal agriculture, and yet we're still building, and our government is approving, unregulated CFOs. That means you can keep 29,000 chickens without being regulated in one barn, and that manure seeps into the land. So, you know, I think that the urban areas, it's great to appreciate it, but we are out here in trouble. Also, Indiana, we cannot focus more, especially with our national elections. Indiana is ranked fourth in environmental quality. Our water, we are almost, I think it was last I knew, we were the 30th worst state with water quality. I mean, this is happening all over the nation, but Indiana,
Marion,
is ahead of the tip of the iceberg.
Let me jump in here,
also,
Marion, because Marion, let me jump in because I can see Molly nodding her head up and down. I think you're going to get an amen from her, and she just wants to pick up the baton that you've handed off and run with it. Thank you very much for the call.
Tell everybody to eat less meat and boycott GMO food.
All right. Thanks, Marion. Take care.
Yeah, I would heartily agree with Marion. I mean, I think it is easy for us to focus directly on our own communities and study the impacts of that, but the reality is that we're all interconnected. All of the ecosystems that we talk about are interconnected and rely upon each other, including how we treat our food. So, I mean, I think I don't need to tell everyone the stats, but certainly she is correct in the pollution of agriculture. We don't need to vilify them in any way, but we could challenge them to look for innovative solutions as they provide our food. And if that's not going to happen, then we can make our own choices.
We've gotten a Facebook question from a listener named Gary, and if you want to reach out to us via Facebook, you can do so at No Limits WFYI. Gary says, how is depaving being advocated at the state, and how can legislation help to reduce paving costs and contribute to this movement?
I don't know about the state level, but I do know that the recent rezoning code of Indianapolis was designed to incentivize things like native plants and pervious pavement, which is the permeable, allows the water to soak through. There are a number of incentivizing organizations like Leadership in Environmental and Engineering Design, or LEED, in which you can design your building to receive a certain score by mitigating not just water but other environmental impacts. I think at this point it's not a legislative priority, if I had to guess, but it is kind of on the individual choice level at this time to what kind of pavement you're working on.
We've got an email question from a listener named Antoine. And if you, again, if you'd like to reach out to us via email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Antoine, I think, is going to direct this question primarily to you, Kelly. He says, hello, I have a question for you all. I'm curious as to what role recreational activities might play in improving the waterways in Indianapolis. I like to kayak and fish, but I never do either on any of Indianapolis rivers. Are there currently any efforts to get sportsmen and sportswomen involved in cleaning and preserving these waterways? Are there other cities that have been able to do this? I'd much rather kayak and fish in the White River, which is about 200 yards from my house, instead of driving out to Eagle Creek. What do you think? Kelly?
Yes, so reconnecting to our waterways have engaged a multitude of partners, one of those being Friends of White River, and they do this program called River School, where they take groups out on a float and float down the White River to educate them about the ecology, the health, and see the waterway as a recreational use. They also have a separate program where they talk about fishing on the White River. You can fish out of the White River. You just have to be cautious at what kind of fish you eat and how often you eat them. Particularly if you're to fish for catfish, that is a bottom feeding fish, which would be more likely to have those mercury and other pollutants in it. So there is information out there. We also have partnered very interestingly with some cross-country groups. Indiana Invaders is a local cross-country group, and they do all their practicing along the White River downtown between New York Street and Fall Creek, and they've become great advocates of how to improve the waterway and see it as an asset to their sport. And that's not a sport you'd usually think of being linked to the water, but when you do trail running, you're in Indianapolis, some of the best places to do it is along the waterways. We also have many trails all throughout our city. And so they're looking at it as part of their give back to their sport is to clean it up, to pick up trash, to clear out the invasives, to allow people to see the water.
Well, and there's just something also I know as a former endurance athlete back when I was younger about running along water, you know, no matter what, how good a shape you are in, after you've run about 17 or 18 miles, it starts to hurt a little bit. Being able to look out at the water is a nice release. We are talking about the state of Indiana's waterways here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI, on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Philip has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Philip, welcome to the program.
Yeah, how are we doing today?
Doing well. What's on your mind?
Well, has anybody talked about the cleanup that's going on? They're digging the tunnels underneath Indianapolis from Southport. I think it's all the way up to Noblesville. Maybe it's just Carmel. My nephew works there. They've been drilling it for 2 years. It's an 18-foot tunnel that goes to every one of the creeks for when the water overflows with a heavy rain, it all goes down there and then gets processed.
Yeah, I think that's what Kelly alluded to earlier, but it's worth repeating. Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for the call and the question, Philip.
So I believe you're talking about the Dig Indy project through Citizen Energy Group, and that is to collect all combined sewer overflows and store them in these large tunnels, like you said, 18 feet, that are over 250 feet underground, and there's going to be 28 miles of this system, and they will go along all waterways. There's one already built along White River. There'll be ones around Fall Creek, Pleasant Run, Pogues Run, and they will all connect and go to our wastewater treatment plant so that everything could be pumped out and treated and then released back into the waterway safely.
John, welcome to the program.
Hey, cool. Thank you.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
I live in Worsley, the north border of Worsley is, of course, the White River. A house I bought was built in 53. It had a combined sewer system. I diverted the downspouts into the backyard. I tuned in a little late, so I don't know if you guys defined what a combined sewer system is. That might help everyone understand what's going on.
Good question. Thanks.
Secondly, the Corps of Engineers wants to devegetate all of that levee on the riverside of the levee. Taking that vegetation out, does that truly help the levee, or would that, I mean, it's been there for a long time. Taking that vegetation out, I don't see it helps the levee. And then thirdly, has anyone ever considered putting a bounty on the Asian carp? And that's it. That's, I'll take that off the air.
Thanks very much for the call and the question.
You bet.
Molly, okay. You were chafing at those to get
sure.
to those.
Yeah. No. As far as the vegetation on the levee goes, well, first, I guess I should define combined sewer overflow.
Yeah.
And that's the combination of the storm drains that we see on our streets and our septic systems that treat our waste and when we flush the toilet.
They all go into the same
portion. Same portion. They do. They're a little bit separate, but the separation is eliminated in about a quarter inch of rain.
Mm-hmm.
So if people can remember that. Every time it rains more than that, you're putting your waste into the waterways. As far as the levee goes, I'm familiar with that project. I won't take a stance on it, but from my understanding, the Corps would like to stabilize the levee by removing that vegetation and preventing the roots from structurally damaging the levee. I know it's a big deal in Wharfley and Rocky Ripple, and we definitely want to stay on top of it. As far as the Asian carp, I don't know anything about that, but perhaps Kelly does.
Yes, actually, in some other state, they've had some really interesting community programs where they've had competitions on who can catch the most pounds of Asian carps. So they kind of make it a fun game. They've also had cookouts where you catch as many as you can and then you have a community cookout. So you do kind of take a fun recreational approach to these Asian carps, which is an invasive fish species that is found in many eastern U.S. Waterways and have become really impactful to the local ecosystems. They're eating a lot of the bottom plants and changing how all waterways work.
Gotten a question via Facebook, and again, you can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI from a listener named Gary, our regular listener named Gary says, I have a question about how the tunnel introduces the clean water back into the waterway. More specifically, will the clean water go into each waterway, and will it do a flush that is release a large volume to move sediment, etc.? Kelly, I'll throw that one to you.
So no, they will not be pumped back to the waterways they came from. It will be going to our current wastewater treatment plant, which currently releases down in the White River south of the city.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the state of Indiana's waterways. Brian, welcome to the program.
Hi, John and guest. I have a question about, you make a comment about waterways being out of sight, out of mind, and the ecological position of them. It could be help for utilization. There's a group of us that love to kayak the White River, of course, and Fall Creek. I think there's a lot of areas that are underutilized, but with things like flotillas or organized kayak events, and perhaps even when it rains real hard, kayaking through the Pokes Run underground would be quite a ball in the promotion of that very that waterway. I know it's pretty much dry most of the time, but you know that fantasy when it rains for about a week to throw your kayaks on it and drive the 6 miles underground with your headlights and see what that's like. But what you were saying, John, about running along the waterways and you get to see a lot of the conditions of it. Little Eagle Creek just got a brand new bike path. It's the most beautiful part there on the near south side. I think when people start to discover that, they're going to start to recognize that that waterway is a vital part of Indianapolis as well. So ideas as far as utilizing the waterways, making people aware of the ecological condition of them, and promote some of the more not popular or not known about.
Brian, we're coming up on a break, and I want to give Kelly a chance to respond to this.
Sure.
But thanks very much for the call and the question.
All right. Thanks for taking my call, John.
Certainly. Take care.
I'll actually be kayaking tomorrow morning in the White River at Broad Ripple Park. There's a great place to put a kayak in there. I would never recommend kayaking on Pogues Run, though. Anytime you would ever have enough water to possibly get a kayak on there, it would be largely sewage. So you would be kayaking
that sounds really appealing.
So that would be the only time you would maybe have enough water. And the tunnel itself could be quite dangerous in a high water event.
We are talking about the state of Indiana's waterways. here on No Limits. My guests are Kelly Brown. She is the Collective Impact Coordinator for Reconnecting to Our Waterways. That's known as ROW. And Molly Trueblood. She's Community Organizer at Butler University Center for Urban Ecology. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Find us on social media or send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about the state of Indiana's waterways today on No Limits. My guests are Kelly Brown. She is Collective Impact Coordinator for ROW, Reconnecting to Our Waterways, and Molly Trueblood. She is a community organizer at Butler University Center for Urban Ecology. Gotten an email from a listener named Elizabeth. And again, if you want to find us or reach out to us by email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. It says, I have been an environmental mental health advocate, having served on the board and Hoosier Environmental Council, and have found floodway filling of the White River for decades. The White River is chock full of agricultural runoff, human and animal feces, urine, as well as industrial pollutants. I would never put my feet in the water or eat a fish out of the water because of that high level of contamination. I feel like it is quite remiss for anybody to be advocating fishing out of or swimming in the White River. I cringe every time I see people swimming, water skiing, or being in the water. Our skin is the body's largest organ and absorbs all of these toxins. Kelly, I'm going to give you a chance to respond since I think you were the one who made the comment.
And so actually part of reconnecting to our waterways, we do have six elements that we think about when we're doing anything in the communities or about the waterways. And one of those is well-being, and Hoosier Environmental Council is a part of that. And something we really do need to promote, though, is how to safely use the waterways, because it is true. You should not be swimming or wading in the waterways that go through Indianapolis or north of Indianapolis or south of Indianapolis for all those reasons the caller listed. On the fishing, there is different studies on that, and it is something that you just have to choose on your own. But it does so that if you do it in moderation, it can be safe. You just need to know what fish you're eating. You should eat top drilling fish, so something like a sunfish, which would be like a bluegill, because they eat smaller animals. Things that eat larger animals have larger bioaccumulation in their skin and be more unhealthy for you to eat. But yes, currently you should not be physically touching the waterway or drinking out of it or anything like that at all.
We are talking about the state of Indiana's waterways here on No Limits. Rick, welcome to the program. Oops. Our phone system seems to be having a small problem. Let me try. Nope, I cannot get Rick. Well, we'll go back then. I wanted to talk a little bit about the mindset that we were talking about earlier, that, you know, at least in New York, they see it as part of the landscape, and the, you know, the water is part of a network that we are all connected to. But often, as in, you know, paving over waterways and things like that, here we see it as an obstacle, something to, you know, to work around or to surmount, rather than necessarily something that is as connected to life as we are. I'm going to give both of you. I can see both of you are excited about this one. I'll start with you, though, Molly.
Yeah, I have to admit that I come from an anthropology background, and so I see the waterways also as cultural dividers. If you think about the White River going basically north and south through Indianapolis and how different it feels on the east side of the river versus crossing over, say, at IUPUI to the west side of the river, it really is something that we are, I think, are rightly addressing as a challenge for Indianapolis, and many other places are addressing as a challenge for their cities as well. And I think part of the goal of both my organization at Butler and ROW is to start making the waterways more accessible. The Elizabeth mentioned, you know, mental health. It is good for your mental health to be near waterways and to be around nature. So we're trying to bring people more and more experiences that are positive with the waterways and allow people to take a different perspective on them.
Kelly.
Yes, and I would point out, historically, we've also seen the waterways as a great asset. We had the Keslow Boulevard plans, which is where we created parks along many of our Indianapolis waterways, such as Fall Creek, Pleasant Run, and Pogues Run. And there was great parks and recreations along those waterways because we saw them as a great community asset. And we're kind of trying to get back to that again now. Through Roe, we're trying to see the waterways as a community asset in a very holistic way. So for people to interact with nature, as a way for economic development, as a way to improve the ecology around the waterways. So maybe removing some of those invasives and getting the types of plants that should be there that can support a larger ecosystem. I think part of this shift of how we viewed our waterways happened historically through some great floods like the 1913 flood. And also there was malaria in the turn of the century here in Indianapolis. So as she was referring back, Pogues Run was a hot spot for malaria. So people were actually getting ill from the waterways. So that perception changed, happened largely from human health. And as we grew, we could no longer support the same system that we had when we first.
We've gotten a message via Facebook from a listener named Victor. And again, if you want to reach out to us via Facebook, you can find us at No Limits WFYI. Victor says, I recently kayaked the White River from Broad Ripple all the way to downtown, getting out by the zoo. Because I had carefully planned my trip, I knew where the dam was that I had to portage. However, I was very surprised to see a warning about the dam was not well marked at all upstream. Had I not planned so carefully, I may not have known the dam was there in time to avoid it. Can you improve the signage to warn boaters to get out of the river before that dam? It seems to be an accident waiting to happen. Kelly, I'll throw that one to you first.
Yes, so there's actually been a lot of activity around these low head dams. Those are the dams that, such as the one on 16th Street, 10th Street, they no longer really have much of an active use. They would have historically been in areas where there was mills and other industrial uses. There are several groups looking at removing these low head dams. But when you're talking about the safety and access, actually Friends of White River have an app you can use on your phone. I think maybe if you just look at Friends of White River on the App Store, and that actually has a full map of White River and many of its tributaries and highlights where those low head dams are, where you need a portage, where there's low water, great places to launch your boat and take them back out. So that's a good resource. Actual physical marking of these dams when you're on the waterway. The issue is a lot of Indiana waterways are actually privately owned on the banks, and so are those structures of those low head dams. So it's the responsibility of the owner to mark them. And in some cases, these dams are so old, there is some issues trying to find out who is actually liable and responsible for putting signage up on those waterways or those dams.
We've gotten another email from a listener named Kara. And again, if you want to reach out to us via email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. It says, although the clean water will be released south of the Indianapolis area, the tunnel system will prevent the overflow of unprocessed water into our waterways at many treatment facilities. An enormous thank you to all the men and women, my father among them, that have been hard at work 300 feet under our city. This will be an enormous step forward for our community. My guess is your response there is going to be pretty much amen.
Right? Yeah. Yes. Thank
we
you.
We are grateful that Citizens is addressing this issue now. It won't be done, I think, completely until 2025, but they are making really good headway on it.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Heidi who says, I actually live in the Mapleton Fall Creek neighborhood and live on Fall Creek. The smell from the water on some days, especially evenings, is horrid. It smells just like sewage. What is causing it? And is there anything being done to fix it?
Yeah, I would say since I biked here, I crossed Fall Creek and I could smell it from the rain that we had up at Butler. And it definitely is raw sewage that you're smelling. There's what look like 90-degree turned manholes. Some of them have a cover on them. And if you see water flowing out of that, it's often a CSO.
Is what can be done about it? Is there anything that at this stage? Or
the Deep Rock Tunnel Project would help alleviate that. You'll still have some sewage smell in a city like this. Because of those storm drains, the smell's actually often also just coming back from those street storm drains, since they are a connected system. It's not necessarily from the water itself.
And when will we see the impact of this? I mean, when will that be done?
It's a phased project, so it won't be 100% completed until 2025, but some will be coming on They're doing it by the different waterways, so White River and then Fall Creek and then Pogson and Pleasant Run last. And I don't remember the exact schedule, but I think some will be starting in 2017, possibly.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about the state of Indiana's waterways. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Rick has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Rick, welcome to the program.
Hi, I want to thank you for this topic and applaud the community leaders for addressing the combined sewer overflow. I want to talk about another pollutant that's not getting a whole bunch of attention, and that's nitrogen and phosphates. If you look at the north, the river on the north end of the city, it's chock full of weeds. And Kelly, when you kayak tomorrow, you'll notice that the river's almost non-navigable above the Broad Ripple Dam, which tells me it's getting a massive nutrient load from upstream. Does anybody, to your knowledge, monitor the nitrogen and phosphate items in the river? And it's more than just an Indiana-Indianapolis problem. We contribute to the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico because all of those nutrients end up there eventually. So I will hang up and listen to your answer. Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call, Rick. So, Kelly, since he invoked you, I think we'll go in your direction first.
Yeah, so we do have statewide water quality monitoring through items of the Indiana Department of Environmental Management. And I believe on their website, they do show you where they do those monitorings. So they're required to monitor the types of pollutants in each of our waterways because of the Clean Water Act. Also, many cities and municipalities test their water on a local basis. So if you wanted to look at your health department website, like Marion County Health Department also monitors their waterways 5 times a month. So more actively than item does. But we are required to look at it not just for E. coli, but also, like you said, the nitrogens and phosphorus.
Tafrica, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you very
Certainly.
Much. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can. Awesome. What's on your mind?
I was just thinking about education for children, and I think you touched on it a little bit earlier, but I was wondering what organizations or just as a community, what we're doing to educate children about the waterways and the role that litter can play in helping or not helping those waterways stay clean.
Thanks very much for the call and the question,
Thank
Molly.
You.
I'm going to give you first crack at that.
Yeah, sure. There's a number of organizations. I'll try to rattle off a list real quick. I work with an organization called the Outdoor Youth Exploration Academy that's based around Mapleton Fall Creek area. They do not only outdoor education for things like archery and fishing, but also they host a couple cleanups every year. There's an organization called Earth Charter Indiana that works primarily
Jim
with
Poyser's
kids.
Group.
Jim Poyser,
yeah.
And then the Friends of White River is doing a project also with some folks in the Riverside area and kids there to get them out on the waterways. And I think those personal experiences definitely make kids understand more and more what happens when their waterways are when they pollute their waterways.
And to add to that, White River Alliance also launched a kids' pledge on their Clear Choices Clean Waters campaign, which is more interactive, engaged to how children can change their activities and their be a better steward of the waterway.
Should we rely on philanthropy, though, to do? I mean, it sounds like these are all private organizations, not-for-profits, that are doing mm-hmm. it because they believe in it, but which is important. I'm not disparaging mm-hmm. that, but you know, by and large, if you really want to move the needle here, at some level, government has to get engaged. Are we doing enough at that level?
I think certain corporations are doing better. Like notably, Lilly was involved in the formation of Roe and really cares about. You know, they're involved with the White River Alliance as well as Roe, but they really care about the impact that they have. I would say for people listening, you need to advocate through your dollars and you need to voice to your legislators what's important to you.
We are talking about the state of Indiana's waterways. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Aaron has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Aaron, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I've lived on the river for many years, and I believe it's our city's greatest asset for sure. But my main concern, and I've noticed this just over the last 4 years, is what's being done, how much the milfoil has grown. And in some areas, it consumes 2/3 of the river above the Broad Ripple Dam. And if it's done that in 4 years, where are we going to be in another 4 years? And what can we do to activate citizens or our local government to help? Because it's a plant that can grow up to 12 inches a day. And it also collects all the silt. And so you can see geese and heron actually standing on it. So it is, it's really becoming land, and we're losing the river. Any input on that, greatly appreciated, and thanks for having this conversation.
Certainly. Thank you for the call and the question, Aaron. Start with Kelly, but I'd like to hear Molly's thoughts on that, too.
Yes, so aquatic invasive species are an international problem. And in Indianapolis, I think the most activity I've seen around this is on the canal, because the canal is actually about 60% of our drinking water in Indianapolis, and that comes from the White River, and they've had some milfoil problems. And so they've been dredging it and removing it. Up where you live, north of the Broad Ripple Dam, I don't know of any planned activity, but I would say that would be something to maybe get involved with Friends of White River and maybe raise awareness to ITEM or DNR. They do have sometimes community volunteer days, and they could possibly train groups of individuals on how to properly remove that and handle it once it's out of the waterway. Because something to consider with these aquatic invasive species, like you said, they do take the sediment, and depending on where that's coming from, those sediments could have pollutants in it that you might want to be very careful on how you touch it and how you dispose of it.
Are there future threats right now that we should be worried? I mean, obviously, a lot of this, it sounds like, decisions that were made a century ago have had tremendous consequences for the waterways and for our life here. We've only got a little bit of time, but are there things we're doing right now that perhaps we ought to think twice about, Molly?
Well, most of the efforts recently have been around another invasive species called honeysuckle, which a lot of people really like the smell of, and was used as an ornamental. So as we've been removing that, which usually occludes the visual of the waterway and makes a big difference aesthetically, is that we've removed one invasive species to allow others to come in. So I think systematic management and study of the right way to remove invasives is something that we're actively trying to do. Things like garlic mustard and winter creeper that will come in after the honeysuckle removal. We just need to make sure we're studying how we do that. And we do have some folks doing that.
Kelly, you got about 20 seconds.
Okay. To actually take that in a different direction, we've been talking a lot about water quality, but quantity will probably be a big issue in the state of Indiana moving forward. We have a lot of industries using our water, and we're not permitting or monitoring those as closely as we could. And groundwater could also be a very big issue as we pump those and use that for drinking water and other sources. We don't have actually a great enough knowledge on the hydrology on a statewide level to know how much water we will have in 30 years, and that will have a very large impact on an industrial level and a local level. So we need to be very conscientious on how we're using the water, because one of the big issues is as it rains, like we talked about with the combined sewer overflows, it goes downstream and it doesn't recharge the ground aquifers, so keeping the water local.
That will have to be the last word. For now, I would like to invite our listeners, though, to continue the conversation on our Facebook page. I'm sure that Molly and Kelly would be glad to come back and answer questions there. I'd like to thank my guests Kelly Brown and Molly Trueblood for what has been a fabulous conversation. I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Cherzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.